Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode.
Hey, everybody, it's your old pal, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, the promoter extraordinaire from Connecticut's terrific Comic-Con happening only at the Mohegan Sun, except no substitutes, every August in Connecticut. And this week on the Power Cosmic Podcast, like we do every week, we are talking with our good friend and yours, the author of many articles that you see in such publications as Back Issue Magazine, Alter Ego, and soon, the Jack Kirby Collector. Live from the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 to 90, the finder of lost things, like the St. Anthony of toys, Mr. John Cimino.
Hello, everybody. Always a pleasure to be back with you, Mitch.
I know, John. Where else would you be? John, I got to tell you, I'm a little perplexed today. I'm a little sad right now, John.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I can't find a piece of one of my toys, and that's why I'm not in the best mood this morning.
Wait, you can't find one of your toys?
No, not. I have the toy. It's one of the pieces from it is missing right now.
Oh, why? Because you played with them too much and now you lost them.
No, here's what happened. Here's the thing. Over the years, when you and I were kids, we had toys. We had like action figures and soldiers and all that stuff, and we blew them up and we destroyed them. And then when we grew up, I don't know about you, but for me, there was some bizarre reasoning in the head, I can't get it, but you wanted those toys back or something cool. And then once you did get them, you kind of worshiped them. You put them on a pedestal or a shelf, and you just stared at them. I mean, they were no longer toys. They were objects of admiration or desire or even worship, if you will. That's what it's come to. And it's kind of sick, and I don't understand it. So basically what happened is one of my Captain America figures, I have many downstairs. It's kind of a niche thing I do is collect Captain America toys. And I went down there. My son's out from college, and he was down there playing video games, and he moved stuff around, and I went down there afterwards to see what was going on, and I noticed the shield from this little Japanese Captain America figure I had is missing. And I got to say, John, I've spent the last hour and a half looking for it, and I can't. I think it's gone.
Wait, but the funny thing is...
Yeah.
Two things about that story. Number one... When your kid's down there playing video games, and after he leaves, you have to go in there to see if any of your toys were touched. That's pretty horrible. I know that's probably not what you did, but it's what it kind of sounds like to me.
No, I go down there. I go down there just to see what's going on. I mean, it's part of the house.
Seeing if everything was moved. Oh, my God. But number two, a Captain America figure that's missing a shield, throw it away. It just doesn't work anymore, if you ask me. That is such a horrible thing. It's just, he's missing the shield. I don't know if I could ever like it.
I know, it's like Superman without his cape, right?
Or yeah, or like when you had the Migos, and then like the decals would come off, and it's like, yeah, that's Captain Marvel, but he doesn't have the lightning bolt on his chest. It just doesn't work for me. It's like, you need to get another one, or put one on it. It's just, but Captain America missing the shield, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I know, and I don't, it's like, Darth Vader missing the lightsaber, you know? It's like, that's an iconic piece. You have to have that.
Yeah, it is iconic, but it's Captain America missing the shield.
He's just a guy.
He picked Darth Vader without the lightsaber. Captain America, he's always with the shield. You don't have the shield, it's not Captain America.
I can't throw it away, John. It was this figure that I got in the New York Comic Con this year. It was on special. It was from Japan, as all things are. And it was called a New Egg Captain America, and it's very bizarre. It's a a short little body, but he has a ginormous head. It's really deformed looking.
Yeah. You kind of described yourself right there. So was there a likeness going on there?
Maybe that's why I was drawn to it so badly. And I was like, and there's just so much stuff downstairs. It's one of those things, you know, I look back at photographs when we first moved in and the kids were small and they had their toys and such. But over the years, you acquire more stuff and you put some things out and you got some statues and you got some books. And before you know it, there's like no room down there. And it's kind of scary. I actually worry sometimes if I'm going to be on that show Hoarders, you know?
Have you realized that you've actually collected more as you've gotten older? Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's the thing. I remember when, you know, I got married, you know, where you moved out of your parents' house and all that stuff. I didn't have much. I had a couple books. Always had my comic books. I mean, that's one thing I always had, you know, long boxes of comic books, but not a lot of toys. I had like a shoebox, literally a shoebox that had my Star Wars action figures from the Kenner line in the late 70s and stuff. And, I was like 12 or 13, so I stopped collecting that stuff around 81. And I literally, 20, 30 figures in a box that were all worn, missing some pieces. But you just kept them because, I don't know, they were part of your childhood. You were a fan of it. I had no Mego toys. That's all long gone. I had so much stuff. G.I. Joe, all those big gym action figures, all that stuff. That's all. You probably have it now. You're probably washing it off and selling it.
Well, you know? I get some of them sometimes, but the big gym things, I've had a few of those during what I liked about the big gym, do you remember the ad in the comic? Was it Jack Kirby drawings? Remember
it was
that?
Jack Kirby drawing, yes, indeed. And I think John Byrne did the comic book. He had a thing called, now Big Jim, for people that don't know, he was a shorter version. No, he wasn't G.I. Joe. He was about 9 inches. He was more like the Barbie dolls. He was made by Mattel. And he had, like, he was known for these muscles where you would bend his arm, and he'd have, like, this, like, bicep that would appear under the rubber arm. Remember that?
Yeah, and he had a couple of a very ethnic-oriented group. Remember they had, like,
the Wolf Pack.
Sidekicks there,
too. It was called the Wolf Pack.
Yes, the Wolf Pack.
Yeah,
I remember that ad. The funny thing is, when I was a kid, I mean, that was a little before my time, but I never saw those toys ever until years later. I just always remembered the ad.
Oh, no. Those came around, I got to say, the late 70s. And I remember getting them because I thought it was cool because he had a Mustang. Oh, no, not a Mustang. I'm sorry, a Corvette Stingray. And all they did was take Barbie's pink Stingray and they made the mold black and red. So now it was cool. And it was Big Jim's, I think it was called like the Attack Corvette or the Attack Vet. And you press a button, the headlights would come up, but they'd be like guns. And he did have this ethnic group of soldiers or mercenaries that he traveled with. Like you said, the Wolf Pack. There was like a Native American guy who had like bow and arrows. There was a guy that looked like a longshoreman that had bolos. You know, those like balls at the end of the string. Yeah. And then there was Big Jim. He was the leader of the group. He was like the Sergeant Fury. And it's right. It was a cool thing because it had a comic book that had Jack Kirby artwork. So, yeah, you're right on the head. Now, how do you find those now?
How do I find them? Usually they find me. I mean, obviously flea markets and all that stuff. But people bring me collections all the time. And sometimes you get surprised. I love going to people's houses. And then you'll see, like last year I went to this guy's house. And it was like he was getting rid of his toys. So I go into his room. I mean, excuse me. I go into this room down in the basement, and it's like he had his old. Remember, kids had toy boxes back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
That was a big deal. But I open up his toy box, and you can just see his whole history there. I just remember toys. You know, you would see like little figures at the bottom. They could have been it could have been anything. They were like muscle figures, and then they were also like die-cast metal figures and Captain Action, but there was just so many little parts and clicks, and I just start laughing because I remember my toy box, because you just like, some of those toys came with so many different things, and you would just see pieces of stuff, like, oh yeah, I remember that went to that other toy, or this Evel Knievel figure, you could just see Evel Knievel's boot or his helmet there, but I love seeing that stuff, because especially that stuff from the 70s and mid 80s. It's just like, you can see their whole history, but I love seeing toys like that. But I did get a Big Jim stuff. I only got them once. It wasn't, they were out of the box, obviously, and they don't go for that much. They kind of fall a little bit under the $6 million man range of, toys. Yeah. But, I do remember, when a guy brought it to me, I still get excited with that stuff, because you don't see it every day,
No, you don't. And like I said, because we didn't have, there wasn't a Big Jim TV show, there wasn't a video game, they would have to create these backstories for the kids. When you get them, you're like, well, why do I want this action figure? What's so good about this? And they'd come up with, like I said, the Big Jim Wolf Pack. It was like, he's on a mission to find a lost satellite up in the mountains.
What they did to Captain Action. If you remember the comic books, didn't Gil Kane draw some of those comics?
Yeah. And that, you know what? There was another figure that I would get as a kid, because they were at the Five and Dime. No one knows what a Five and Dime is, but it was a Nickel and Dime. That's what it's from. But those were, you know how you got these stores, what are they, like Five Below and Family Dollar? I think this is what they were equivalent to. Maybe it was like a Kresge's, which became Kmart. But I would go to these stores, and they would have a figure called Action Jackson. Action Jackson. And he was from Mego, and he was just the same people that brought the world's greatest superhero toys, Superman, Batman. But the funny thing about Action Jackson was he was about an inch smaller. I think he was only 7 inches as opposed to 8 inches, right?
You could be right there, but I think he was around 8 inches, too. It predated the Mego superhero stuff.
Right.
It did predate that. Yeah, I remember. They had vehicles, they had different clothings and all that
stuff.
Commercial, too.
I didn't even know they had a commercial. I never got any of the vehicles, though, but I do remember you'd get, an outfit where, there'd be skis and, ski poles, and he'd have, an outfit like James Bond. The artwork on the boxes was always great, It was all that real, basically like a James Bond. It was like an action figure. He was, underwater in a scuba diver and outfit fighting a shark. They'd have some really good imaginations going there. And the kids would buy it, and they go, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do with it. I'll take it in the bathtub, and I'll pretend he's fighting a shark, That type of thing.
That was awesome, though. That's when you really played with toys, though, and stuff. They came with you, and there was nothing obviously the reason why these toys are worth a lot now is because when they're in the box and stuff, because they're very rare. But we beat the crap out of those
that's,
toys.
Yeah, because they
ripped those things open.
They told us to do, like I said, when you look at the box art and it's got this guy jumping off a bridge with an explosion in the background, you want to go recreate that. So you took your M80s or your salutes or whatever you call them. I was like a pyrotechnic. I would take the gunpowder out of the firecrackers and make a little a pile of it and almost make a fuse. In the movies when you'd see that line of gunpowder and they drop the match and it goes and then poof, it blows up. I would do that stuff, and you got to remember, I had to be 6 or 7 or 8, and nowadays you'd be like, what kind of kid is playing with matches and fire like that? They'd call the therapist for you, But we just blew up stuff. We would make these beautiful models. Remember model cars or model airplanes? Do you remember? Were you too young for that stuff?
Yeah, well, I was always pure superhero stuff, but when I would get a model, if I would look in the Zares or something,
yeah,
it would
Zares,
always be a superhero model. It'd be the Hulk van or the Spider-Man pickup. There were all those stuff. And I remember the Kiss van, too.
Yeah, I had the Kiss van, the Destroyer.
I would never get, I hated, I wasn't a big model guy, but I would never get models that didn't have anything. I don't care if it was a Mustang GT or whatever it might be. And you want to know something funny? I've turned down, just a few weeks ago, a guy brought in a model collection from the 60s. They were all in the box, and they were nice, the helicopters, B-52 bomber and stuff. They were really nice. They still had the cellophane, but I didn't pick any of them. I said, this is beautiful, but I can't take it because, one, they don't sell because there's no pop culture stuff, but it's just they never appealed to me. If it didn't have a Captain America symbol on the side of that B-52 bomber, who's really going to want it? It just never appealed to me.
No, I hear you. I remember maybe it's a generational thing because my dad, who was born in 36, he was a big model fan. He would buy them and bring them home and he'd, let's put this together. And I was like you. I went to the Aurora superhero set. And I remember, oh my God, this same store that sold the Action Jacksons. And again, this is like 75. The name of the store was called Tops, T-O-P-P-S. And it was like a closeout store. They would get like when other stores would go out or the buyers would go find a lot of stuff that nobody wanted. You know, I don't know how exactly they work the retail industry. But I remember they came upon all the Aurora models, and I went nuts. I mean, I was crazy. And I don't know how much they were. Maybe they were a couple bucks a piece. But I remember my mom buying them. I think I had every one of them. And my dad and I would sit there, and we'd put them together. My mom would help sometimes. And I had, you know, there's Batman hanging on a tree branch throwing a batarang. You know what I'm talking about?
Now, Mitch, I got to ask you this because... Yeah. Were there the comic scenes one where they actually had...
They had a comic book inside of it, yeah.
The comic behind them, or was it the Aurora... They were both Aurora. Or was it the Aurora ones that the original ones from the 60s?
I think it was the original ones from the 60s because what happened, like I said, this was a store that would buy old toys. That's why I would find like Action Jackson and these Aurora model kits, because I think other stores would go out or they didn't want them or they were in a warehouse somewhere. And this Tops, it was a family-owned store. There wasn't like a chain of them. It was a local thing. And I think the guy would just get a lot of these, like L-O-T, not a lot of them, but like he'd buy a lot from an old warehouse. And we'd get these because I remember having the Aurora models and Spider-Man's on a banister spraying his webs down on people and the Hulk is running across the like nuclear testing site. Of all that stuff, but there was also like a comic book that would come with some of them. Like I remember the DC ones had comics.
Yeah, those are the comic scenes. They were reproductions of the 66 Aurora model, 66, the ones that came out in 66 and 67.
But they were called Aurora, though, right?
Yeah, they were Aurora, but they were comic scenes. It was basically the same model, but they repackaged it with a comic book, and I remember the Hulk one was Herb Trimpey. He was webbing Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah.
And why we called it comic scenes is it was a comic book, but the last scene in the comic was just like a scene where you were supposed to put the finished model in front of, like a scene.
Yeah.
So... those actually came later. Remember the ones with Batman with the batarang, Superman busting through
the wall,
wall, and there was Robin was putting the he's in front of some computer thing and he's like flipping the switch. And to be honest, Mitch, I have the original ones right now at the Raynham Flea Market. I have still cellophane. The 66 Robin of Aurora model, and I have two already made but beautifully painted Batman and Robin ones too. Those are from 66.
You mean somebody
ones, like it came a little after.
Well, see, they weren't painted. I always hated that. You'd open that box up and it would all be one base color. You know, it was all injection plastic molding. Hold on a second here. Color was, it just bugged me because, like, you'd open it up, you'd see this great color photo on the box, and, you know, you wanted to make it look just like it, and then you'd open it up and it'd be all blue, or the Hulk was all green, or Spider-Man, I think, was all red or something, you know, and you're like, okay, and you're dealing with kids here. I'm no Michelangelo at age 8. I can't handle a brush to make it look like that, and that was the most frustrating thing. It would never... I tried. You know, you try painting that Superman logo with a brush when you're a kid. It's not going to work, you know, and the paint gets everywhere. It wasn't fun, John.
Yeah, yeah, and you'd paint the eye. One eye would be bigger than the other. That was, you know.
Yeah, now, who thought this was entertaining? Did you ever try making any of them, John?
What's up?
Did you ever try making any of those?
I tried to make the Hulk one, and obviously it was painted horribly, you know, because the Hulk one was always a green hue, and the Spider-Man one was blue. I think he was all blue, and they were tough. I was never that good at that kind of stuff. I never had the patience for it. That's why I would rather just get a Mego figure and stuff and play with that, but because I didn't, it would always, and if one thing broke, you were all done.
Oh, yeah, no, forget it. Like, I don't really want to go into it. But what other toys, let's talk more about missing pieces. Because I do remember that toy box. The toy box was like an archaeological site. You could go through that toy box and see years of your life. Not a lot, obviously, you're a kid, but you could see about the span between like 3 years old to like 10 years old in a toy box based on the little pieces.
When I was going through this guy's like toy box, you could see his whole life, and I knew the dates when all these toys came out to like. Because it was from the mid-70s all the way to the early 80s. And I just knew, even little pieces of stuff, I just knew where they were. Even if I couldn't remember the toy, I just remember seeing them, like in my brother's toy box and stuff. Because that's what you did, is you just threw them into the toy box.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you would clean up. I remember just like clean up and everything would go in the toy box. I would have hours of fun. My mom was like, clean your room or something. And you would just go exploring through your toy box and find stuff as a kid, like, oh, here's this, and you start putting things together again, you know?
Oh, yeah, and then you would always mix and match, because you go over a friend's house, he's playing with the ship, and it's like, that part doesn't go to that.
yeah. Now, yeah, like you said, it's a shame, but then going back to what we originally started, here we talk about having kids, or we're being kids, and we're losing pieces to toys, and things mix and match, and they don't add up. But now we live in an age where I can afford the $100-something statue or the action figure from Hot Toys, which cost a lot of money. But you don't play with it. You just stare at it. It's a dust collector, you know? I mean, yeah. What do you do with these things?
Yeah, you'll never have the love that you had when you were playing with them. So basically... I got to tell you, my job is to sell people an idea. Like, what it does is it just gives you that feeling of when you were young playing it. You don't actually play with it, and you want it in the box and all that because you want to remember it like it was, like it, when you bought it at that Woolworth. But yet, you're not playing with this toy. It's an idea. I sell people that moments in their life.
Memories. Where you're selling memories.
Memories, yeah. I sell them a memory. Sure, you're going to give me $1,000 for this toy. Okay, fine. You're not going to play with it. You're going to get it AFA graded, or if there probably already is. I got a lot of that stuff. And then what's going to happen is you're just going to put it on your shelf. And when you look at it, you remember that time when you loved it. Oh, I remember when I was a kid, and I remember that. But that's what I really sell people. I'm selling you dreams for cash.
Yeah, you kind of just put a very cynical way on it, but it is true.
Oh, but it is true. I'm going to tell you this. It's a funny thing about this. I remember a few years ago. I think I was in Chicago. I was somewhere at a Comic Con, and I bought a collection of those big little books. I had literally.
Oh yeah, I had those. Yeah.
But there was a guy in a wheelchair. This is a true story. There was a guy in a wheelchair with his daughter. His daughter was kind of hot, too. But he was talking to me about those big little books and where I got the collection. And I said, oh, whatever. I was telling him about it. And then he goes, I remember when I was a kid, the one that I loved the most is I love that Space Ghost big little book. And he goes, I would give anything to see it. And it was, this is the true story. I go, well, look what you have in your hand. He looks down, and he was holding the Space Ghost, the big little book in his hand, and he didn't even know he was, and he was telling me that story. He goes, oh my God, this is the book. I go, did you even know you had that? He goes, no. I goes, I can't believe that. But I said, and I told him, that's what I do, and I said this right to his daughter, this is what I do. That moment right there is why you get it. That'll be $50, please. And he gave it to me. But, like, it's that. That's what why people pay money for those things.
Oh, no, without a doubt. No, you do strike a... And I think of that, too, if that's what it is. And that's why all the new stuff doesn't... It's so empty, that new stuff, because it doesn't have those values. I mean, buying something when you're 50 years old is not the same thing as when you were, like, 7 and you had to save up for weeks and cut the lawn and you got that toy and you played the hell out of it and you broke it and all this. And now
well,
you
Mitch,
just...
You've bought a lot of stuff off me, and I remember you've dropped in a couple, you know, you dropped some four digits on me a few times.
Yeah, sure.
But, like, let me ask you why. Once you bought that stuff and I got them for you, you put it downstairs in the basement in the box, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like I know I have it. So it's like, oh, I have that memory back.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it doesn't make sense. It's like, you're not going to bust open that. remember that beautiful box Mego Captain America I sold you? And it's like, you weren't busting that thing open and playing with
No.
But yet you gave me a lot of money for it because you just needed it. You just wanted
to get
you back to that time. It gave you that idea, that dream.
Well, that's different, though, from comic books, because a comic book, I can buy an old comic book, pick it up and read it, and it's the same thing again. That's timeless, that in a way.
Right. You know? No. There's more of an interaction with the comic book, correct. But why do they want them in such good condition? Because honestly, for me, I love my comics battered. I hate CGC. I hate that stuff because there's a distance there. The energy is holding the paper, smelling the paper, turning the page, and enjoying that. That's me. But why do they want them so rare, like so high grade and all that stuff? It's because they want to, a lot of the times, they want to remember it on the news, you know, like on the newsstand, or they love it so much, they just need to have it in such pristine shape. But I'm kind of like, okay, you have it in pristine shape, but you're never going to touch this thing. Now, I get it from a dealer's perspective, you got to sell it, you got to make money on it, but for me personally, it's like, I don't get it. It's like, you want it so bad, but you want that, you just need to have it so perfect because it means so much to you.
It's kind of like those guys that have those old cars. You know, they redo them and they make them like brand new, but they don't drive them and don't even think about touching them or anything like that.
Right, exactly. And they spend, especially in the cars, they spend millions of dollars on these cars and these parts and all this stuff, and yet they don't even want to turn the crank, you know? It's funny. You want to know something funny, Mick? I'm actually guilty of this, too, because I told you before I bought the arcade game.
The wrestling game.
Like, the huge arcade game I bought. It cost me a ton of money. I had to get it perfect, too. It was all restored, all this stuff, and it's beautiful. Now, literally, 90% of the time, I don't even touch it, and it's not even on. I just like the fact that it's in my house, and I can look at it, because when I was a kid going into the arcade, I always wanted it, and now I have it. And just on occasion, sometimes when I do my cardio in the morning, or I'm doing my weights, I'll turn it on and just have it, you know, with the lights all on and stuff. But I barely play this thing. Sure, when my daughter comes over, we'll play it sometimes, but 90% of the time, I don't. Why the hell would I spend so much, but it's just more of a decoration than anything. But I do it because it brings me back to that time of when I was a kid and I wanted that thing. It's a freaking huge piece.
Oh, yeah. I remember when you got that thing. I had to hear about the whole move-in and the glass broke. It was an epic event that day.
Oh, I will admit, yes. Moving, I've moved a lot of stuff in my time. I've done demolition work. I've been plumbing. I've done masonry. I've done roofing. I've done it all. Landscaping. And I've But this stupid arcade game was the heaviest, most awkward, because it's top-heavy, most awkward thing I've ever moved in my life. Now, I had to bring it down a flight of stairs. I had to get it into my man's room. But I also had help from a neighbor across the street.
Oh, yeah.
My brother,
I remember.
The guy himself. And even after, we were like, this is crazy. And yes, when Mitch was just saying about the glass, it's called the plate glass or the bevel glass. For some reason, I didn't. I had to take some of it apart to get it through some doorways. And so when I was just about literally a few feet to where it was going to go, all you hear is a shatter, and it literally a million pieces of glass went all over my tile floor, all over. I could not believe it, and so I had to buy a new one. But I was just about, after everything we went through, I was just about there and that glass broke. But since then, I had to spend a couple $100 on this glass and all this stuff to get it perfect. But why the hell would I want it?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. We should get a psychiatrist on the show. Maybe we shouldn't, because they'd both lock us up if they heard some of these conversations we have here. But there's got to be a fundamental reason. I think 90% of it is, like you said, you just want to restore those memories you lost as a kid, and that's what it comes down to. But
it's the magic of youth, you know?
It's the fountain of youth. Yeah, go ahead.
No, but another thing, it's like, okay, you look at me and you. Me and you live a pretty good. We live a pretty good life. That we're like we don't have many ailments. I mean, yeah. The stresses and all that stuff of life. But like we're relatively pretty healthy and stuff. And it, like I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I never have. Never will. And I look at this, and I have a great relationship with my daughter, and we have a great life. Like you with your kids and stuff. It's like it comes down to this. What else are we gonna really? What else do we really?
I know. We don't have any vices. I told my wife that years ago. I was like, I'm going out to the comic book store. I'm going to spend like 20 or 30 bucks. And then, you know, I'm sitting there thinking about it. I go, Jesus, you know, she doesn't have to work. I'm not going out skirt chasing. I'm not drinking. I'm not in a strip joint. How sad is that? We're just like these, like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go play with a comic book or a toy that I found 30 years ago. You know, that's about it. That's simple pleasures. I'm happy.
Yes, yep. Simple pleasures. Now, I can understand comics can be addictive, toys can be addictive, and people, I know a collector, ready for this one, I know a Mego collector who has an unbelievable Mego collection, but he refinances his house to upgrade.
Oh, no.
I don't know how people live like that. It's just like, are you kidding me?
I was going to say, I've been out to Rancho Obi-Wan, which is the property of Mr. Steve Sansweet, who's, I think, the world. Largest, like Guinness World Book record of the world's largest Star Wars collector on the planet. And I know some other guys too that have huge Star Wars collections.
Yeah, and a lot of people make that claim.
Oh my God. No, this guy literally does. He's written books on it. He has like every scrap, everything you can imagine. And the thing of it is, I asked him that. I interviewed him years ago on the IndieCast. You can hear the interview out there. And I said to him at the end, two questions. Why do you collect all that stuff? And he went on about how he loves Star Wars, and he used to collect Japanese toy models and robots before that, but there was just something about Star Wars, and he just couldn't stop, and he just loves it. And then he realized at some point there's space issues, you know, where are you going to put everything? So there's that, so he's narrowed his collection down, and now that they relaunched the new movies, he says he's going to just stick with the old vintage Star Wars stuff and stick with that because you can't get everything. It's literally become impossible now to get everything. But the other thing is I asked him at the end, I go, what are you going to do with it all when you're dead? And he looked right at me and goes, what would I care? I'm dead. I go, you know, I got to give you that. You don't really worry about much at that point.
No, I hear you. I mean, but like we were saying, like some people can go overboard. Some people... anything can be.
Oh, no. To your point, I'm sorry, I meant to say, but he did say that. He said, if you're mortgaging your house, or you're missing your rent, or you can't afford your groceries because you're saving up for that, you know, couple $100 Darth Vader figure, you really got to sit down and reorient your life and get a perspective on it because it's fun, but you got to put it, you got to have some boundaries. You can't forfeit your life.
Anything can become addictive. But for me, my biggest thing is I don't need to. There's a very few things I like. Like I said, this arcade game. There's a couple of toys I have. Like I have a good, like the Stretch Hulks and stuff. I have them in beautiful condition. But there was just stuff I had when I was a kid or I always wanted, and I have this. I must have my personal collection is probably about maybe 200 pieces, if even that. So it's very narrow. I love to buy and sell stuff. So when I get an Amazing Fantasy 15, yeah, I love it and stuff, but I love to get it and then I love to sell it to somebody that, like, I love that now I get to give them that thing for their collection or they get this. I don't need to have a Hulk number one anymore. I've had 7 Hulk number ones in my lifetime. 7. I never thought I would have one, but 7. And I don't have a Hulk number one for me personally, but I bought and sold them and I love that. I don't need to have it anymore. Hey, but some people do, you know? I've changed my collecting energy into a different focus.
It's like Citizen Kane, you know, that's our rosebud. When we're on our deathbed, we'll say, Mego, Spider-Man, and we'll drop dead right there. I got to tell you, that's what I love doing the Comic Cons. I mean, when I produce those suckers, the best part is I get that backstage pass to walk around before the show opens or even after hours, and I look at all that stuff. It's like going into the world's biggest toy store. That was always my dream as a kid, to get locked in a toy store, or you know, or you'd win that shopping spree for 5 minutes.
And you, 5 minute shopping.
Yes, and you get to go with your cart and you get to get whatever you want. Oh, I had it mapped out. I said if I ever won this fictitious contest and got that 5 minutes alone at Toys R Us, but when I was a kid it was called Child World, we had it mapped out. Where we would go. My friends, we'd sit there and go, I'd head for this section, I'd get all these, I'd get all that. Huh?
Of course. But, Mitch, the other funny thing is what you said is you like to go there and you like to look at the stuff. You necessarily don't have to buy it all. You
no,
just like to see
no.
it. And the other thing about starting, we talked about this before, about when, you know, you doing your Comic-Con and stuff, that we love it also with the creators. It's like sometimes we'll be talking to these guys that'll be like, Jesus, that's Roy Thomas.
Oh, no, that happens to me all the time. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Well, whatever creator we like, and you'll be like, yeah, I was just talking to Jim Shooter, and he's just like, well, Mike Zeck or whoever, Jim Steranko or Neil Adams, and you'll say like, God, I used to love his work. We get our thrills different ways, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, I have to bury the fanboy for a while, because you have to conduct business, obviously. You're a grown man, and, you know, they're there to make money, and you're there to make money, and that's the business side of it. But the whole time, I mean, never once do I not stop and think, oh, my God, I'm sitting there talking to Neil Adams. Oh, my God, I'm talking to Roy. You know, it's just because that's... Same thing with movie actors. I never imagined when I was 9 or 10 or 12 that I would be sitting across from the guy that's on the movie screen that's 40 feet tall. You know, I'm sitting across from Sam Jones, and he's having water and a salad, and he's talking to me about my kids and stuff. And you just sit there and you go, and again, Sam Jones isn't like, you know, Academy Award winning actor Sam Jones or, you know, somebody famous, but he's Flash Gordon to you and I. And I'm sitting there going, I remember watching this guy as a kid, and now he's sitting across the table from me, cutting his broccoli, and just talking to me. And again, he's just like everybody else, as my dad would say. They put the pants on one leg at a time, just like you and me. But there is that weird, surreal moment when you, the 9 or 10-year-old inside of you just cannot believe that you're here. So,
right, I mean, case in point, I've met Stan Lee so many times, and I've hung out with Stan Lee a bunch of times, but I remember I kissed him on the cheek, like, and I told him what he meant to me, but I was like, you know, and then we'd be sitting at this, like, little dinner thing, and I'd be like, oh my God, like, that's Stan Lee right there. How much happiness did he give me in my life? You know, it's like, that, I get off on that, like, that stuff, and it's like, yeah, I like to befriend them. And now, like we were talking about with Roy, I mean, I talk with Roy every single day, and it's just like, sometimes it's kind of weird, and I'll be like, my God, I just remember Hulk 142, and like that issue that he wrote, or some of these issues that it just blew my mind, and I'm like, here I am talking to the guy that put the pen to paper, and he's just a normal guy.
Oh, I know, and that, like I said, a lot of them, and some of them will come out and tell you point blank it was just a job. And, it, you know, you're not naive, you're not a child, you understand it's just a job, but it does mean so much to so many people that it's more than, to them it might have been a paycheck just to pay the rent and get the groceries, but to you and I, it was the stuff that dreams are made of. And
absolutely.
I was going to say, and that's how we're going to wrap this one up, because we're over time, it's 36 minutes. So, John, one last question. What is the one thing you lost as a kid? And how bad did you feel? Not that you got it years later, but what was the day that you lost a certain toy or broke a
piece? Okay, really, really quickly, yeah. I got it was the Amazing Spider-Man web maker. And basically what it was it came with these small little figures,
yes.
Little things that you had to break them off, and then you put like a web, you use some sort of goo. And you
They're little yellow figures, then, yep.
Yeah, and then you could hang them on that web. But what happened was, when I opened it up, I was at the bottom of my parents' stairwell, and there was a drain right at the bottom there. So right when I opened it up, the Spider-Man, it came with a Spider-Man, a Mary Jane, and a Green Goblin, and a spider.
Yes.
The Spider-Man figure fell down the drain. And it was like, right when I opened it up, I was like, oh my God, the one character you wanted to use with this stupid thing fell down the drain. So I was...
And I remember his arms were backwards, like a hook. You were supposed to hook him onto the web.
Right. Because
I had that.
They were so small.
Oh, but you know what I did with mine? Do you remember these things called hydro rockets? You'd put water in this little red and white rocket, and you'd pump it up, and you'd build up water.
Yeah, and then the air would push it.
Yeah, you'd build up pressure, and the thing was like a lethal weapon. You'd release it, and the rocket would zoom up into the sky. I taped the Spider-Man. I was playing Baron Zemo. I taped Spider-Man to that rocket, pretending he was Captain America, and I pumped that water bottle thing up, and I let it go, and it shot up in the air, and when it crash-landed, there was the rocket, but no Spidey, so I lost my Spidey somewhere out in the atmosphere. He's gone.
But really quickly, I promised myself when I was a kid that I was going to get another one, and I never did. It literally...
Oh, yeah, yeah, you never get that.
Early this year, I went into a collection, and a kid had one still sealed. He had the webmaker. So anyways, when I bought his collection and stuff, I took the Spider-Man webmaker, and unfortunately, I never opened it again, but I have it in my collection of little toys that I still have. But it took me, like, 30 years to get it.
Well, the one last one I'm going to say, man, we're over today. But anyway, Kenner action figure, Princess Leia, came with the early bird kit. I bought that. That was my Christmas present. The figures finally showed up in late February. It was Chewbacca, Luke Skywalker, R2-D2, and Princess Leia. And I remember the box came to my grandma's house, Grandma Amelia, and I went over there and I opened it up and I was taking out the figures and they had these little accessories, and Princess Leia came with a little laser pistol like she had in the movie, a little tiny black thing. God knows how small it was. And I dropped it, and it, like, inside my grandmother's couch. You know, the box opened, the little gun fell out, and I couldn't find it. I don't know if the couch ate it. I remember taking those cushions out, looking underneath, looking in the seams. Never found that laser pistol again, and I always sit there and go, what the hell happened? I was right there. There was nowhere it could have gone. It was right in front of me. It probably landed on my shirt or my pants or something, and when I got up, it dropped it somewhere else. What vacuum cleaner ate that, or maybe the dog ate it? I don't know, but I always wonder about this world that's full of just lost toy pieces somewhere out there, you know? Thousands.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, then that's the way we're going to wrap this up. And how do we end it, John?
And that's that.
And that's that. Good night.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.